Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from a radioactive bunker deep inside the Bracket compound, this is Real Spoilers, episode 550. Joe, what is it?
A milestone.
A milestone. You have to really enunciate. So thank you for joining us. It's the numbers still surprise me, even though we've been doing this since 2013.
Yeah, this is nuts.
550 of these things we've recorded. Like, it's such a library of us talking. It's crazy when you think about it.
Which I'm sure nobody wants.
Well, hopefully somebody does.
And, yeah, that's true. Yeah. And, it's a legacy I'm going to leave my kids.
Exactly. So a lot of interesting things they'll be learning when they finally listen to these episodes.
I know.
Right?
You know, like that terrifies me. Like, this is going to be out there forever.
Forever. The internet doesn't let anything disappear. So before we get too crazy into this episode, let's do our shameless plugs. Follow us on social media at Real Spoilers on Twitter, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. You can find us just anywhere you type in Real Spoilers on the podcatchers. Subscribe, rate, review, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, you know the drill, and reviews are greatly appreciated. Joe, you actually informed me last episode that we have a new one.
We do, yeah.
Give me a second, but we're going to read that after the intros are done here.
Okay.
So have that on standby.
It's ready to go.
And Patreon, which very relevant for today because we do have a Patreon supporter with us, joining us for the podcast, a returning guest and patron, Linnea Thunzel. Hey, Linnea.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for sitting through our last episode of Oscar predictions, which we are recording while the Oscars are about halfway through, but we gave all our predictions before we saw anything, so it's all fair game. And go back and listen to that if you haven't already. By the time this gets posted, the Oscars were a couple days ago, and we give our predictions, and I myself am very curious at how wrong we got them. So it's just so hard to say with the Oscars, but go listen to that one, and thanks for joining us, Linnea, and Patreon.
We know that I'm at least 0-1 so far. So,
oh yeah, don't give it away though. Don't give it away. Speaking of Patreon, it's patreon.com/realspoilers. $5 a month or more if you feel so generously inclined. Gets you bonus content, extra episodes, all sorts of good stuff there. And it really helps the show because it helps us with when we have to buy a new recording software, wires, whatever, to upgrade the studio. Keeps the show going along. So we do appreciate it. Joe, what do we have on this review?
So this one came in on January 30th.
I was going to say for July. That was
July 30th.
We were really.
Yeah. From T Mill Gohawks. Gave a 5-star review, which I always appreciate.
Ooh, thank you.
Said, started listening to this, just looking for another film review podcast. And I've got to say, it's quickly become my favorite. After I listened to one episode, I had to listen to more. Went ahead and downloaded all the episodes of movies I've already seen. The knowledge of movies and tangents are hilarious. Couldn't recommend more.
Do you think this might be the Tim Miller director?
One can only hope.
So, T-Mills, if you are Tim Miller, let us know. And even if you're not, we still appreciate you, but it would just be interesting to know.
I mean, yeah, they can't all be home runs, and you did your best with Terminator. So, good luck to you, Mr. Miller.
I actually enjoyed Terminator Dark Fate, so...
Maybe I need to rewatch it. It was what it was.
I thought it was fun. It's a Terminator movie, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It was fun. It was fun.
Yeah, and Linda Hamilton, I'll still say, it gave me chills when she walked on the scene.
Who apparently wanted to be really fat.
Well,
I'm
glad they went the other direction. She was badass when she walks out with that bazooka or whatever grenade launcher thing she has. Good stuff. Absolutely. So let's get into the movie of the day here on episode 550, A Milestone. It is Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
It was tracking to make around, let's say, $55 million leading up to its weekend release. And we just got the totals in at Box Office Mojo. They're looking at $33.25 million, a huge drop, $20 million plus under expectations. We got into it a little bit last episode, but I think really the factors that some that we touched on already and that I truly believe were a problem, that R rating. It's not to say that R rated movies can't make a ton of money, because they have. But one thing that I've always appreciated with an R rated movie is them leaning into that R rating.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, but when I got out of this movie and I saw it twice, every time when I walked out of the movie, I was like, that did not need to be rated R. It wasn't crazy enough. It wasn't violent enough. The language was like just dropping an F-bomb here and there sporadically throughout the movie. If they would have made that PG-13 for the teenage audience that's going out on Friday and Saturday to buy tickets to movies, I think you easily would have made back another 20, 30 million, maybe even more. Thoughts on
maybe.
That?
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like they leaned into the R as much as they were willing to go, or maybe as much as, and when I say they, I mean Warner Brothers. I don't know what the director was willing or how far the director was willing to go. I also feel like Margot Robbie probably has more say than most people at this point when it comes to that character and what she wants to do in a movie. I know that she's got some pretty big clout with Warner Brothers at this point, given that she was the only good part of Suicide Squad.
But you mentioned that, and that was another point that we didn't touch on last episode. So you've got Marvel movies that have a Marvel Studios logo attached to it, which is a lot of weight. When you see Marvel,
the Marvel Studios logo.
Well, either
not
way.
I guess that's true.
Well, either way, so you have Marvel Studios, which has made the MCU in those 23 whatever films, you know, up to Infinity or up to Endgame, and it's still obviously pumping stuff out. You've got that name, and so even when it's not an MCU movie and it says Marvel, people don't know. We know we're film people, we understand the difference, but the general audience, I guarantee you, when they see Marvel, they go, oh, Marvel movie, right?
Sure.
Like that's quality, that's synonymous with quality. So you've got Marvel movie is one thing, to Deadpool's, you know, then you've got, I think, a movie that Deadpool leaned into that R rating, where I did not see this one doing that. So I think that the trailers were really funny for Deadpool. Trailers for Birds of Prey, not good. So you could already tell that one was going to be very funny and very provocative, all that good stuff. And then on top of those points, this is a spinoff of a terrible movie. You've got a
big
spinoff.
Problem.
You have a spinoff from Suicide Squad. Logan's rated R. Logan has Hugh Jackman, who's played Wolverine in what, 4, 5, 6 movies? So,
no, more than that, right? Like, so 3 X-Men, 4, 5,
well,
six,
before
like 10.
Going up. Well, really? Okay. Well,
yeah. So X-Men 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
X-Men First Class.
Okay.
Days of Future Past.
We had a cameo in
that. Still counts.
Okay,
and
but
then Wolverine Origins and
X-Men.
Don't talk
Wolverine.
About
that.
Yeah.
And so 7. He played him 7 times.
That's what I'm saying. So you had 6 movies leading up to Logan. You have huge X-Men movies that were popular. They were, you know, 2000. It was Blade in, I think, 98 that kind of
kicked
off.
Blade was 99. X-Men was 2000.
2000.
Spider-Man was 2002.
Yeah, so you're talking about Marvel and that era where X-Men movies were huge. They were really well received. Hugh Jackman is a person you know. So I think it also leaned into it, but it also had that recognition. And then you have this movie coming off of Suicide Squad, which is hated by critically.
For the normal people.
It has a really hardcore fan base, but it was an international hit. But really, I think critically and most people agree that it was not a good movie. So you're already down a peg. Then you have DC, which doesn't have the most consistent track record.
Yeah, you talk about when you see the Marvel logo and you're like, okay, you know what to expect. And honestly, it's the same thing with DC at this point.
Opposite,
where you see the DC logo, you're like, oh, I know this is going to be garbage.
They haven't earned, but they haven't earned your trust, even though they, I think Wonder Woman was excellent.
Yeah.
Aquaman was a lot of fun.
Shazam was a lot of fun.
Shazam was great. They're heading in the right direction, but they haven't earned that, that recognition of there's the logo quality, right?
And let me get this out of the way right now. I didn't hate this movie.
Yeah.
I thought this movie was a lot of fun. The more I'm removed from it, the more I'm like, it was a big, dumb, action, not dumb, but it was just a big action movie. It had its moments that were dumb, but I think this was the most, I say comic book movie, but not a superhero comic book movie. This is like a Harley Quinn comic.
I will tell you what. I know he's not dead, but Joel Schumacher is rolling over in his grave. Because when I saw the zany, wacky colors in this movie and how everyone's loving this movie and how they crap on Joel Schumacher, I'm like, they did what Joel Schumacher did, not in a rated R format, but Joel Schumacher was coming off of Tim Burton's dark and gritty, edgy Batman movies. And Joel Schumacher grew up with Batman 66. And he said, this is a zany kids comic book movie. It's not supposed to be serious. I'm going to make it goofy, campy, fun. Like, the source material is campy. And so he did this and made it fun. And then everyone gives him so much crap for these movies. Uh-huh. And the only thing it didn't have was an edgy R rating. But I was watching this movie like, damn it, they did what Joel Schumacher did with the, you know, people are talking about this is a candy colored cotton candy movie with crazy colors and blah blah blah, and it's like you're saying positives for the same crap that you're knocking Schumacher for doing. So anyway, I just thought that was really interesting. I didn't hate the movie and I liked it more the second time, but I was like right in the middle of the road. Linnea, what did you think?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't think it needed to be rated R. Especially since, I mean, like Harley Quinn, a lot of us know her, you know, from the Batman animated series.
Yeah, where she originated.
Right. And so I think that they could have just done it, you know, PG-13. Deadpool kind of needs to be R because that's the character, right? And I think that she could have been just fine. But I liked the movie a lot. I liked that, you know, right off the bat, you know, that she was dumped or, you know, like, she wasn't with Joker because she's so defined by the Joker.
They got rid of Jared Leto lickety split, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, and I think it was like you said, Margot Robbie, she's a producer on this one. After Suicide Squad, she made some demands for the character, and that was one of it. And I think that was the best decision.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I loved how quickly, and like you only see like a split second of the back of his hair. And like,
do you think that's Leto or do you think that's somebody else?
Well, I think it's someone else at the tattoo parlor, and I think it's Leto for a split second at the chemical plant.
Oh,
Ace Chemicals.
Sure.
But you do see his green hair real quick. That's a scene from Suicide Squad or deleted, or I have not watched that movie again, so I can't really remember.
Yeah, I just saw it in the theaters once, so I have no idea.
So
it's for the best. I watched the director's cut or the extended cut.
Okay,
how was that?
Not good.
I remember when you said that, you're like, hey, I'm watching the director's cut of Suicide Squad. I'm like, Joe, why? I am so curious to see the direction that James Gunn takes the Suicide Squad because they've got the same cast, but it's not following the same story. So it's not a reboot, but it's not a straight continuation. Like, I think he's said basically like the one good part of The Irishman is Joe Pesci and his line. It's what it is. I think he's basically said like, yeah, it's another Suicide Squad movie, same people, not a sequel, so it's what it is, whatever.
Linnea, I'm glad you brought up her changes, because I actually have, somebody put a list of, like, they did a side-by-side of her in Suicide Squad and then her in this, and they listed, like, four or five things. Okay. One of them is that she cuts her pigtails off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which means
she did break up bangs.
She did break up bangs, but the pigtails are gone.
Yeah.
And so that they can't be pulled on anymore. Hmm. Which I thought was interesting.
I thought it was, I also thought it was interesting that she still has pigtails. She just cut them.
They're not long.
Yeah. Like, to me, I know that it's different for a woman, especially when you've been growing your hair out. And I know that's a harder thing to do, but when she just cut them and started crying, I thought it was funny, but I'm also like, you just cut like 6 inches off.
See, and I was like, that's a relatable character.
Yeah, right? Totally. I get it.
Women do that, like, after a boyfriend, especially something like a relationship like that, you need a change. Like, that's what you do is the breakup bangs. And
they actually brought up her bangs.
Yeah. And then also the, we can get to it later, the scene, the fighting scene where she hands one of the other girls a hair tie, because yeah. I hate that in movies when like Wonder Woman's out there, her hair's like getting in her yeah. face. I'm like, no, that woman would have a ponytail holder. Her hair would be back.
Oh,
I mean, like,
yeah,
it's so stupid just to have hair flying in your face when you're fighting.
We'll right, definitely right. talk about it. That was Journey Smollett as Black yeah. Canary, and she's amazing. Yeah. She's my favorite part of the film. Where has she been? She's been acting since she was, I think it was Michelle or one of the little kids' best friends on Full House. She's been around forever. And you may also know her brother, Jussie
yeah,
Smollett.
I was wondering if that was, if they
it's,
were related.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's... Journey Smollett and Jussie Smollett. Yeah. It's not coincidence. So you may recognize his name from the news last year. But
they said just a, these other yeah. things, that her bangs are choppy and fun rather than seductively mm-hmm. like framing her face. Her boobs aren't halfway off of her rib cage, which,
yeah.
and, which like they kind of speculate that she was wearing a push-up bra in Suicide Squad, where in this mm-hmm. one it doesn't look like she's wearing a bra at all. That's not a bad thing. It's just a
I think she's wearing like a
sports
like
bra,
crop top.
Oh, maybe that's
like
true.
Like a
bandeau yeah.
the entire time. So
her skimpy clothes look more like a choice, her choice, rather than like what her boyfriend put her in.
Mm-hmm.
So like the Daddy's Little Monsters t-shirt is gone. And the clothes that she's wearing looks like it's more of her choice of what to wear. And she's not wearing a dog collar, which was yeah. the other like big thing that is gone from this one. So it is interesting that they are, whether that's Robbie's choice or whether that's the choice of the production people, that her look is completely different.
Well, you also have
Suicide
to,
Squad.
I mean, the thing you have to touch on, so Kathy Yan is the director of this, and mm-hmm. so you're getting a movie that's not in the male gaze, right? So
no, totally.
We talked about it with Patty Jenkins and Wonder Woman, right? And first of all, I call BS on the people that are like, oh, that's not sexy. Like, I think
no,
it's crazy. The idea of the internet and these trolls that are like, oh, that's not sexy. Like, what is not sexy about a strong, capable, badass
female? Not even
female?
That. It's... Every single woman in this movie is a knockout.
Super hot.
Yeah.
Super hot.
Every
like,
single
Mary
one.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead and her like Huntress get up. I was like,
yeah.
wow, that's
yeah. game on.
But that's the thing though, is that like their idea, and I think this is a very vocal minority to be sure. It's these
As
people that
usual.
Have these loud voices, but what I don't get is how they see this and like, they're like, oh, they've taken the sex appeal out of it. It's like, did you see the same movie I watched? Like, If I have a complaint, it's not that. And so I think it's a very silly complaint. But going back to Wonder Woman, it's like Patty Jenkins, female director. Wonder Woman was badass. I think it was great. You can see the differences between a male director, female. We don't need to get into that. But this movie is the same thing, where you have that view coming from a female. Like you said, Margot Robbie, producer on this one as well, more input. But I don't think they cut any sex appeal. But what they did was they made it more relatable, like you said, Linnea, to women, where you're like, oh, I would actually do that. Or this is much more practical for fighting. Or, you know, it's not just like, yeah, let's doll them up to, you know, make the male comic book fans happy. So I think it's a really good change for that stuff. Joe, let's get into the movie. I think there's still a lot more to be said about some of the background stuff and maybe why the box office is low, but we'll kind of go through it and maybe we can touch on some points as we go along. So where does this thing get started?
So we kind of it picks up kind of like a here's the problem. Is they do lean into the Deadpool-ness of this movie. And
they
I
try.
Think that they do, and I think that's an issue.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that works. I think Margot Robbie is just as charismatic and can be as funny as Ryan Reynolds, but that doesn't work for this Harley character.
Well,
it did for Deadpool. Because that's Deadpool's shtick, is Deadpool in the comics looks at you know, breaks the fourth wall. And is in doing things like that, and where Harley, that's not really a thing.
But they've tried to make her into that, not just in this movie.
They have,
but with the new show and everything, how she is. That's like
is the show like that as well? I haven't.
It's like an R-rated show. Like the language is foul. You know, they're trying to make her into that Deadpool character, but. I have to disagree a bit with you. I like Margot Robbie. I think she's amazing. Tanya.
I agree.
She was good in Bombshell. I think she's an amazing actor. But is she as funny and charismatic as Ryan Reynolds? I don't see Margot Robbie as a comedian. I don't. That's just nothing against her. But I don't know that she necessarily is. You know, we talked about it. Ryan Reynolds is Ryan Reynolds. Like, you see him being a smartass and everything. I just don't know that she is as good as that. And maybe it's a combination of writing and such, but I don't know. That's just my take on it.
I don't think you're wrong.
Like, I do think that she has, the same charisma.
Yeah. She's charismatic for sure.
So basically we pick up, they already tell us that she has.
Well, we started at the beginning, the Joe.
Started with her telling her backstory with the animation.
Yeah. How much did you guys love that it's Batman the Animated Series characters for the animation?
Great.
When she's at Ace Chemicals, she's wearing the Harley Quinn from the Animated Series. The Joker looks a lot like the Animated Series Joker. Uh-huh. So you're coming off a spinoff of a movie that had a Joker with a terrible character design, and they basically from the get-go say, screw you, here's the backstory of Joker. Oh, and guess what? It doesn't look anything like Jared Leto.
It was definitely noticeable that Jared Leto had been taken out of this movie.
Yeah, it was a nice touch though for fans of and if you don't know, Harley Quinn was created a character by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm for the animated series in the 90s. I think it's the best animated show of all time, and it's not a superhero best show. It's that show had everything, and maybe we'll get into that at another time. But
maybe
a little hint there. But
we know that she has broken up with the Joker. She's taken it. She lives above this Chinese restaurant with the elderly Doc, who kind of has like his ear to the ground with whatever's going on in Gotham City. As she's recovering, she kind of plays up the. She doesn't let anybody else know that her and the Joker have broken up. So she still gets all of the perks of being the Joker's girlfriend because nobody wants to mess with the Joker.
And the protection.
Protection that comes along with it. She's untouchable. Like there's this whole scene where she's in a nightclub just getting hammered. And that's
Ewan McGregor's club.
Yes, correct. And
Black Mask.
The Black Mask. Who apparently, we'll get into that.
So Roman Sionis is Black Mask, and he's an up and coming. He wants to be Gotham's biggest crime boss, and people don't necessarily take him as seriously as he would like to be taken. But he's a rich guy. His family had money. He's trying to start this criminal empire, but he's not making many friends. And I thought that club scene was fantastic. I loved
the frenetic
energy, the way it moved around, the way she popped up like seamlessly. She popped up in different spots as the camera moved around. I loved the energy and the editing and the way they did all that. I think one thing that really sticks out to me is how stylized and how weird and goofy it is. I like that. It doesn't feel like every other comic book movie we've seen. So props to them for making these weird scenes, you know, in a good way. You know, it's different.
Yeah. So she, we're not introduced to Black Canary yet, but she's on the way. But we are introduced, like she jumps off the table. She's dancing on the table. She jumps off on this guy and snaps his legs in half.
Roman Sionis's driver.
Yeah.
And
right.
He was being rude to her. So
he was. No. Like that's the thing is like everybody, in, like she didn't just do it for fun. Like he was being a dick to her.
And I love that when Sionis says, oh, well, he probably deserved it anyway.
Right.
He can't really
he
say
doesn't
anything
want to mess
else.
With the Joker. I'm wondering, is that the same club that we see in Suicide Squad?
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
I don't remember a club scene.
Yeah.
there was a scene. That's where the Joker kills Common, the tattooed man.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're in a club. And I thought, if they're going to do it, if you want to connect everything. Make it the same club.
Do you want to connect everything?
No. I mean, they do. Like for all intents and purposes,
let's say it was not. I'm going to try to distance anything from that.
Sure.
The production design of that club though is really cool because they had those like the statues, like the mannequins around with like the different masks on them.
Yeah.
In that club too.
I think I'm almost positive you see a Catwoman mask back there.
Really?
Oh, maybe.
I think you do. Okay. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that you do.
Okay.
So this is where actually we're introduced to Dinah Lance, who is a singer at the club. And she's we find out that her mom was involved with the GCPD in some capacity. I mean, that's a legacy. She's a legacy character I'm pretty sure in like the Silver Age that Dinah, in the comic books at least, that the Black Canary that we know is the second Black Canary.
Yeah.
So, you know, but she doesn't want to have it. She doesn't want to have anything to do with that life. So she's just kind of singing in the club and she's getting closer to Roman.
But her mother was a Black Canary. It's her mother was actually, and they allude to it in this movie.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That her mother worked for the police, worked with the police department in some, either as a police officer or as a vigilante,
yeah.
Which Gotham has kind of been known for a very long time.
But she inherited the powers. I mean, so for people that don't know, the Black Canary, it's the Canary Cry, right? That's her.
Yeah, the Canary. Yeah,
it's her.
And I feel like that the Black Canary has become, I feel like she has, with the Arrowverse, the Arrow TV show.
Yeah.
I feel like the Black Canary has become more noticeable than before.
Yeah,
because I mean, she was front and center.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so she went by Laurel Lance, which is the middle name.
Well, the problem is that there's been a few of them because there was Laurel.
Sarah.
Now it's Dinah.
Right.
So
there's been a bunch of Black Canaries on that show. Then there's a White Laurel. Canary.
Right. So there's, but I agree though. It's the popularity. That's another reason. Like, you've got such a huge fan base from these CW shows, and a lot of them are those teenage, you know, the younger crowd. And so they're the ones that want to maybe show up for this movie. And I think going back to the rated R thing, they can't buy a ticket. Yeah, sure. Someone can buy you one, but the crowd's going out on a Friday, Saturday. And even if you buy a ticket to something else, that's not going to help Birds of Prey, right? Because they don't get the money. So, you know, you're not getting that crowd in there. But I think the CW shows have had a huge impact on these characters. And, you know, and it's not the rated R crowd necessarily who's the big fans.
And it's interesting that they have... Has everybody watched Crisis yet?
I haven't. Oh, yeah. Don't say it.
No.
Sorry.
Mute your microphone, Kevin.
Skip. No.
Anyway... So we are then introduced to Renee Montoya, who is one of my all-time favorite characters, not Bat-related, in Gotham City.
Yeah.
She becomes the Question at one point. She is she's a fantastic character played by Rosie Perez. And it's not the casting that I ever would have thought, but she nails that character. Like, she is exactly what I picture as that character. And she figures out that Harley's the one that blew up Ace Chemicals, and that...
We didn't mention that after their breakup, and Harley was at a Mexican restaurant getting margaritas, and she hears her...
the Roller Derby Girls.
Girls.
There was a montage where she joined Roller Derby and... did all that stuff too.
Yeah.
Beats everybody up.
But, you know, she's still like, it's hard for her to make friends. And even though she thinks she does, they're talking behind her back like, oh, she'll be back to the Joker and she needs an alpha. She's submissive. And obviously that really gets on her nerves. So she scoots out of there and she takes this guy's semi and runs it into Ace Chemicals and makes this, like, you know, beautiful, colorful array of explosions from all the chemicals.
It's a very
necklace. Yeah. The J necklace.
Yeah. That was the signal that Renee needed to realize that the Joker and Harley had split up.
Talking about editing, though, the only thing I didn't get from this, like, I thought it was a little weird. She threw all the margaritas on the ground, and then she left, and then she had a drink in her hand. I mean, I guess she could have picked one up from somewhere else, but but it was just a little weird. Like, where'd she get that drink from? She just, okay.
So she takes off, and this is where the cops are like, man, do they realize that it's open season on Harley Quinn now? Like, that's
it goes back 4 minutes earlier.
To what?
Yeah.
She goes back 4 minutes in time before the explosion, and Montoya is investigating the crime scene where the crossbow killer has taken out these mob bosses. And I thought, again, visual wise and the way they edited this, where she's basically doing like a Sherlock Holmes type thing where she tells you how it happened, and you see Huntress, who she really is, come in and kill these guys, and we don't know why yet, but it goes between the flashback and real life where then the color gets colder and the guys are dead, seamless. The camera lines up right there, and I thought it was a really neat transition.
Yeah, it was, and it's interesting. Like, this is when we get to the origin of the Huntress of this character. That's actually, it's spot on. This is exactly who's there's two Huntresses. There's the daughter of Catwoman and Batman from Earth 2, and then there's this one. And this one, I keep wanting to say Valerie Bertinelli, but I know that's not right.
Helena.
Yeah.
Helena Bertinelli.
Yeah, and on Earth 2, she's Helena Wayne. So it's fun to see. Here's the only problem I have with this. One of a couple problems. If you're going to do a Birds of Prey movie, this is where you get Batgirl. This is the point where you introduce Batgirl, because Batgirl was Oracle at the time.
Yeah,
she was sitting behind the computer. But if you want to introduce a Batgirl, she was the originator of this team.
Yeah, I thought it was a very odd choice. If you're going to title it Birds of Prey and the Birds of Prey aren't even in it until the end of the movie, like, how do you not get a Batgirl?
Well, also,
isn't Cassandra Cain a Batgirl at some point?
She is. Yes, you're right. She is.
She is the second Batgirl.
Yeah.
I guess that was one of the things that didn't stay true to necessarily any comic book or show, is that they made Cassandra Cain a young pickpocket, which
yes,
is just
correct.
Yeah. Interesting choice.
Which is. I mean, I understand that we're not in the standard DCU, so I get that we can throw these characters in kind of however we want, but yeah. I thought it was weird that we introduced the Birds of Prey with no Barbara Gordon.
Yeah.
Also, right. When we get to like the big set piece, are you telling me that there are no members of the Bat family anywhere in Gotham at this point? Like, when you get to the big thing at the end, I'm just kind of like, well, I feel like somebody would have shown up.
Are all these people?
Where are you? Like, okay, fine. Batman is off fighting Darkseid somewhere.
Maybe he's,
I get that,
fighting the Joker.
Maybe that's true.
Roman maybe isn't big enough to.
But I feel like
to be on the radar
when they get to that final like big old fight scene.
But this is their city. Yeah,
there's a gang war.
Yeah, like, where's I agree. They kept this movie very sectioned off. It's mm-hmm. Harley Quinn's story. It's the building of the Birds of Prey team that they're going to try to make something into. They didn't feel the need to introduce a lot of other characters. It wasn't even though it was a spinoff of Suicide Squad, they really used very little as far as characters or the story. It was,
you see a picture of Captain Boomerang.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah.
So
I was like, that's the only character coming back for James Gunn's Suicide Squad.
So yeah, they did keep it sectioned off though. So no,
was
we
that
don't
Jay
see
Courtney.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah,
that's the right reaction. But yeah, so after all of that goes down, Montoya kind of makes moves towards, not sexually, towards Dinah to kind of get her to be her informant, her inside person. And
well, they go into Renee Montoya, like, she had a big bust a few years ago and her boss took the credit and is now the captain. And so no one takes her seriously at the police department, and she's getting kind of frustrated because no one's paying attention about Huntress.
Correct. And she's kind of like, she has all of this. She's been building a case against Roman, and she's, you know, she's making all of these inroads to these different big cases, and nobody will take her seriously.
Let me ask you guys this. I think this is a good point to ask this question. And I'm not saying that this means you shouldn't see the movie, and I'm not saying this is the only reason that people didn't show up for this movie, but in this movie, they really do paint every man as being terrible.
Well, Kevin.
Also, I mean, it is Gotham. Like, there's a lot of corruption and bad. Like, not saying that all men are bad in Gotham, but when, how many? I mean, you could name on one hand how many men in Gotham City are good people, and you could even question if Batman's even a good person.
But I just wonder, though, I mean, for the box office, though, but could that have played part in it where, I mean, it's great that it's pro-female and the women are badass and everything like that, but they do paint every single man as being a bad guy, and there especially is a certain crowd that is going to be completely turned off by that. It was kind of like your complaint in Rambo 5 or whichever one it was. All the Mexicans were bad guys. If you want men and women to show up to a movie, and especially this comic book crowd, which can be a very toxic crowd, I just don't know if you can get away with making every man horrible, because then I think they're just going to lean into that. Oh, see what I told you? It's so anti-man, whatever. I just thought that maybe they could have done a little bit better job with having some. I mean, even her really close friend, Doc, turns on her, right? Like, I mean, every single man in this movie was awful. And so I just, something that struck me as interesting that they made that choice. Like, I feel like they could have went pro female without going completely anti man, and I just think that's going to make the toxic fanboys pat themselves on the back.
I don't know, Linnea, what did you think? I have feelings about it, but I think I'd like to hear your opinion.
Honestly, I didn't bump on it at all.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you.
There are plenty of movies that have little to no interaction with women at all, like The Irishman comes into mind. Yeah. I mean, I just feel like a movie that focuses on the female characters pretty much entirely, and then the men are either background or the bad guys. I think that's, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I didn't bump it at all. I thought it was funny that, like, everybody seemed to, from Harley's point of view, every man that she comes across tries to take advantage of her.
Sure.
Buying her hyena. The salesman is a creep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Every single guy she runs into, well, all of them pretty much want her dead. But, but like, from her point of view, that's always been the case, right? Like, ever since, like, the background that they did, the animation with her dad and everybody else.
Right.
So I think for this character, there may be a nice guy around a corner at one point, but she's not going to focus on that.
Well, it's interesting in the comic books, when Suicide Squad came out, the movie itself, they relaunched the series and they gave Harley an actual, like, somewhat healthy relationship with the Joel Kinnaman character, with Rick Flagg. Mm-hmm. And it was a normal, I mean, granted, it was still Harley, right? Like, it was,
right.
We're not going to pretend that she's a completely normal person, but it wasn't a abusive relationship until something happened that I think spoilers, he dies in the comic and she snaps. So, like,
but that wasn't, I mean, at least it wasn't like, oh, he cheated on her.
No.
Betrayed
her, that's what
right?
I'm saying. Like that relationship was completely normal.
Yeah.
But I do agree that, like, you look at a Superman movie or a Batman movie, the love, you know, the only time that there's a woman in those movies is when she's Bruce's or Clark's love interest, you know? So I don't really have a problem with every man. And I these comics.
There was a good man. There was the guy, the bodyguard that saved Huntress. And then
his for
brother
sure.
and her father, his father and brother raised her and trained her and stuff like that.
Oh, that's true.
A badass.
But from Harley's point of view, there are no good men.
Yeah.
So right.
It's just food for thought. Just interesting.
Even the ones that are good, you know, they're not.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, Batman is technically a good guy, but in Harley's eyes, and maybe this version of Harley, she might look at him differently, but the Suicide Squad Harley thinks he's a bad guy.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Joe, because that's something I wanted to touch upon somewhere in this episode. I think one of the reasons that I don't really like these movies as much as I could is because they're bad guys. Like, I don't want to root for Harley Quinn. Like, at the root of it, I don't want... Harley Quinn's not a good person. She's a bad guy.
She murdered a Robin.
Yeah. Like, if it comes down to Batman, like, when I watch the animated series, when I watch any of the other Batman movies, like, yes, I can like Joker as a good villain. I can like Harley Quinn as a really good villain. I want Batman to catch them and put them in jail. I don't want Harley Quinn to win. That goes against the whole hero bad guy thing. So again, I know that maybe other people have different opinions and I want to hear from you, but at the end of the day, I don't want to root for the bad guys. Like, I want Batman to catch her and put her in jail, and then I want her to be funny and find a way to escape, and she can still be an enjoyable character to watch, but I don't want her at the end of the day to start a business and get away and become a millionaire. And why would I want that? She's a villain. She's a bad guy, right? Like,
but
am
so
I crazy
Catwoman.
Here?
I mean,
I don't root for her to win either. I want Bruce to put her in jail. Like,
no. I mean, but you're not going, like, that you don't, though, because that
but
is
I
a,
do.
Is,
I love that
hard,
when Batman kisses her and then puts handcuffs on her or whatever.
Like, it is a hard line to walk to be technically a villain, but also have them, you know, it's, I don't think Catwoman's a villain anymore. They have redeemed that character almost completely. I mean, Christ, he married her for, like, they're married.
But it's different, though. Catwoman, I don't think was on the level of villain as Harley
no,
Quinn
she's
murdering
just a thief.
People with the Joker,
no.
Right?
Catwoman, you are right.
Catwoman can be redeemed. I don't think Harley Quinn can, and they can try to rewrite history as much as they want, but at the end of the day, she's Harley Quinn. She's an evil, terrible villain who murders people, and I'm not saying Margot Robbie isn't funny or fun to watch, and there were a lot of really entertaining moments, but I was trying to figure out, like, why didn't I love this movie? Like, it was okay. It was entertaining. Again, saw it twice. Liked it better than the second time, but at the end of the day, it kind of clicked in my head. Oh, wait a minute. It's because they're making Harley Quinn the hero of this movie. It's the same reason I don't like a Venom movie. I don't want to root for Venom. I want Spider-Man to defeat Venom, right? Like, I am not a fan of Venom. It was a bad movie, but I don't want a Venom movie. I don't want a Venom 2. I want Spider-Man to put...
You may not want it, brother, but you're getting it.
But I
so,
want...
So did you have the same problem with the Joker movie?
That's a great point.
It is.
That movie wasn't for me personally, so
But let me tell you, I thought about this, and you are not rooting for the Joker. That's the difference. That movie does not make you root for him. By at least the midpoint or by the end of the movie, he's a terrible person and he should go to jail. It's a great movie and a great performance, but I'm not rooting for Joker to win. I'm just rooting for the movie. You know, I'm interested in the movie. But at the end of the day, no, I want Joker to be put in jail by Batman. That's the only thing I want to happen with Batman, with Harley Quinn, with any villain, with Penguin. I don't want you to make them likable. I want Batman to put them in jail. And that's all I'll ever want from a rogues gallery of villains. And so I think trying to make a murderous villain the hero, as funny and cute and silly as she can be, it's like at the end of the day, she's the bad guy.
Yeah,
it's just, I think, the root of it. And it didn't click until the second time I saw the movie, where I was like, why don't I love this as much? And I thought back to Venom, because it's another solo. They're doing the same kind of thing where Venom was the solo villain Sony movie on the Marvel side. Here's the solo Harley Quinn movie. And I just don't think, for people that love Batman, I don't know. It's just an interesting thought. So
the other thing about that I would say is that Harley in particular, like, I agree with you. Like, I didn't see Venom because I didn't really think I would enjoy that.
Yeah. Did you listen to the episode, though?
But I did.
Oh, then that's perfect.
Yeah. Okay. But I think the difference with Harley, like, especially this movie, she, when that guy came back and she had, like, that she and the Joker had tattooed, and he was like, you did this to me. And she's like, well, it wasn't me. I mean, I was there, but it was the Joker. And he was like, oh, you dared him to do it, though. I think with Harley is that she was so manipulated. Like, I'm not saying she wasn't responsible. I agree. She was a bad person, but I mean, running around doing that stuff, like, when she's left her own devices, she ultimately does the right thing in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, protecting the kid and, like, teaming up with these other people and helping them out and all that stuff.
But she does the whole time. I think that's interesting. And I actually give them credit for when she turns the girl in. She's selfish.
I think that last moment, like, you know, when Doc turned against her too, that was like, oh yeah, this world sucks.
Yeah.
That's what I'm supposed to do. So
do you think that was her, breaking point when Doc turns on her? She's like, because then she turns the kid over almost immediately.
Yeah. It was right after that, because he said, oh, it's just business. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
He was her only friend.
Look out for number one. That's what Doc did. So I think it's definitely like you guys talked about the same thing with, like, Hobbs and Shaw, because wasn't it Shaw?
It was Jason Statham, yeah.
Yeah.
Murder.
Well, they've totally retconned that now, apparently.
Yeah. Right. but that's the, like, exact reason, though. It's still the same thing where it's like they realized they had that problem and they had to retcon it, because otherwise their family now is the guy that murdered their family, and that just doesn't work in that world, right? And so how can you root for Shaw when you know that he murdered their friend? Like, how could they ever forgive Shaw? And I think you run into that same problem where it's like, yeah, how can you ever forgive Harley Quinn for her sins? And
well, maybe that's why Batgirl's not in the movie. That's why they only took
That's a very good point.
The renegade cop and then the rest of the, you know.
Okay. Well, interesting. I'm glad I was interested to hear your guys' opinion, because I think that's at the root of my question, like, me questioning the movie as a whole, and do I want it? So cool. All right, back to the synopsis, Joe.
Yeah. So then we find out that Roman has made a play, and he finally has his hands on the Bertinelli diamond, and inside this diamond is, like, the names and bank accounts of, like, everything that the Bertinelli crime family had. And this is kind of the MacGuffin, if you will set Roman apart from everybody else. He tries to make a deal with this boss Keogh, who we see end up, they do some interesting, like, Guy Ritchie, Tarantino flashbacks and forwards, where we see this family hanging from this old dirty warehouse. And Roman basically has this henchman who turns out to be Victor Zsasz, who is a major Batman villain.
Weird to see him with hair.
I think this is early Victor Zsasz. Because if you look at him, he doesn't have all the check marks yet. Like,
well,
he's
does have a lot. He's got a lot of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought it's, you usually see that character without hair. So
that's
just
true. Yeah. Bald. Yeah. And I think you see him in the Nolan stuff.
Do you?
I think he's in the Nolan stuff at some point. Yeah.
Okay.
But basically he peels their faces off. And that's, you know, that's how they're trying to make it, you know, as sadistic as that character can be.
Well, let me ask you this. So I think that's, in this movie at least, that's a Black Mask thing. Is that something in the comics, Black Mask likes to take people's faces off like masks?
I don't remember that being a thing. I thought the Roman's face was disfigured. And that's why
I thought
he
that's
wears
why
the mask.
Right, because Ewan McGregor just looks like a handsome dude in this movie.
Well, I guess when you hire Ewan McGregor, you're not going to put right. You know, you're going to Tony Stark it and not put a mask on him.
Right, but that's my thing, though. Like, Black Mask, you always saw that character in the comics and the shows with a mask on, and I do believe it was to hide his face. And in this movie, he doesn't wear it until the very end, but he also has a fascination with masks. He has masks all over his club. He has villains that dress up in masks. He takes their faces off, which seems like he's making a mask out of them. And so
I kind of expected to see it some point given this movie is him wearing like a skin, like a leather face mask.
Right. But that's the thing, though. Again, it's like people talk about this being rated R, and I didn't think it was very R. Like, you know, I saw it first and then decided, should I take my son to see it? And then I took him to see it. I'm like, this is fine. And he left it being like that. He even said it. He's like, I didn't think that was really that rated R. They cut the face off, but you don't see it.
Well, he does cut the face off of the girl.
But they never cut away from it.
Yeah. He walks out of the room.
Yeah, he starts cutting around his face, and then they cut the camera, and then you see Zaz holding up kind of an out-of-focus face or whatever.
Right. And then
you don't see the others. So my point is, I guess, they could have probably done a PG-13 with that. Like, I wouldn't say that scene was like, oh, yeah, we got to have that in there, because it wasn't as gruesome as seeing him, like, rip off the face. I'm not saying that I wanted that. I think it should have been PG-13. But, again, like, it wasn't that bad either, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely made a choice with not showing it.
But we see in a flashback that that guy would not let him in, like we alluded to before. Right. Sionis wouldn't
partner up with him.
Yeah, he wants to run Gotham, and people don't take him seriously. And this guy's like, yeah, the Golden Lions or whatever their gang is, like, it's a family business for 100 years. We don't partner up with other people, and this is what happens.
We don't need your protection.
Yeah.
And then
maybe they did. Spoiler.
So now Dinah has been tasked as Roman's new driver. So Roman kind of has Dinah take Zaz, and they're going to go to, I guess it was like a safety deposit box, and get this. He has the diamond.
Someone tracked it down eventually.
Yeah, that the Bertinelli crime family was completely massacred and slaughtered. So this diamond has kind of been floating around. Roman has it. Dinah and Zaz go to pick it up. In the process of them picking it up, they run into Cassandra Cain, who we had seen once or twice earlier as like this side character that would pop in and out.
I appreciate the Guy Ritchie type of crime action movie
grifter
stuff.
Kind
of. Yeah, like the way that, you know, seeing it a second time especially is helpful, but there's a lot of things they show you and then they go back in time and they really show you what happened, but you know, it's all there. And right. I appreciated that. Having seen The Gentleman recently, as we just reviewed that a couple weeks ago, I appreciated how this movie did some of that with the showing it to you, then rewinding, going back. It worked for me, and I like that. Yeah, you saw Cassandra Cain in the police station, but you don't know why she's there. Then we see, as they go to pick up the diamond, she's going around pickpocketing people, and one of them is Zaz,
and she takes the diamond.
Yeah.
So this is kind of putting us on a collision course with all of these characters, whether it's Huntress or the Black Canary or Renee Montoya and Harley are all kind of on this because of this girl. They're on this collision course together. And so Harley ends up getting captured by Roman, and she kind of says, look, I know who's got it, or she doesn't know who has it, but she's like, I'll get it. You let me out of here, I will get you the diamond. If I don't get you the diamond in 24 hours, you do whatever you want to me, fine.
And that was another flashback, because they jump right into her at the police station.
Right.
Yeah.
And we don't see till later after they caught her that.
Which I thought was a great sequence. That is a kick-ass sequence of her in the police station.
that was pretty good.
It's a great sequence, but the problem I have is it's a police station full of officers with guns, and you're telling me no one shot her?
She's too fast.
They're bad police officers.
They ran.
Yeah, it's Gotham City. They're awful police
officers.
But
they were running away from her. It makes me frustrated when, I mean, I know it's a comic movie, whatever, but when they put her in a police station with officers that in the second time I watched, I'm like, they've got guns, okay. And I get that she was too fast for a couple that were next to her. It's a police station. There are
dozens of
officers.
So here's the thing you
got to
think about is most of these officers are working in Gotham City, right?
Yeah.
So when you see Harley coming into your police station, who do you think is not far behind?
But remember, she
nobody knows. No, they don't know.
They did.
Renee knows.
I think they even say she sent out that message in a stupid way to where now she's fair game. I would think that the police, the dirty cops, especially in Gotham.
I got to tell you, if I'm a police officer in Gotham City and I see Harley Quinn coming into the police station, I'm not taking that chance. I don't feel like dying with a weird, creepy grin on my face.
Okay.
I'm running away.
That's the only excuse that is reasonable. If they still think she's with Joker, it makes sense. But I just didn't like the cops all like, first of all, they were horrible. And second of all,
yeah,
like,
of course.
But no one shot her. Okay.
No.
So
no.
Well, like,
I'm not.
Some of them tried. And then she definitely takes out a few.
Yeah.
But she doesn't kill them. That's the thing. She's not,
yeah.
She's
she
going
does not,
around killing
she,
the
yeah.
cops.
She
which,
T2s them.
Which yeah. that's the only saving grace, because at first when she walks into that police station and you know they flash back and then we see the whole sequence later, but when she walks in with what looks like a grenade launcher, I'm like, she's gonna go murder a bunch of cops. So at least
she's just gonna shoot confetti at them.
Yeah. So anyway, that is a great looking scene.
Yeah.
I will say this entire movie, the action sequences are on point.
It's a John Wick guy.
This has some great action sequences, and it's also coincidentally it's the cinematographer of Venom. So
we talked
about that earlier. Yeah, Matthew Libatique.
Okay, yeah. Apparently, they had one of the guys from John Wick did a lot of the stunt work.
It's really good. Like it's fluid. It looks like it's the actors. Like obviously, there's a lot of stunt doubles involved in this movie, but the editing was very smooth.
Yeah.
Not a lot of choppy cuts. So good job on the action.
Yeah. So
that fight scene in the evidence locker was really good.
So good.
Oh yeah.
So good. So Harley comes in and she's gonna take Cassandra, and this is where she gets like the text message that Roman has put a $500,000 bounty on Cassandra Cain.
Yeah.
So now not only does Harley have to get herself out, now she's got to get Cassandra out with all of the gangs or whoever coming after her. So this is where we get that amazing fight sequence in the evidence locker. And I thought the best sequence of the movie is when she's beating the guy up with a baseball bat, and then she takes the bat and throws the bat and bounces it off the ground and hits the guy, and then she catches it back. I was like, yeah, that was pretty dope. That was
amazingly badass. Yeah, yes,
the cocaine was really good.
I thought I was gonna say she gets a snoop full of cocaine and just goes off.
Yeah, that was fun.
So yeah, so she goes. This is where we get the identity of. She goes back to see Doc, and we find, you know, we get all that info.
Grocery shopping, and then
and then she's like, "How are you gonna pay for all this? I'm not. Like, what are you talking about?" The breakfast sandwich gag was actually my favorite gag of the movie.
I thought that was hilarious with the wind blowing in her
hair, and
she's in love. And also, like, that's at the beginning of the movie, but so she gets this incredible sandwich, and she gets interrupted as she's about to bite it by Montoya, and then she, you know, sticks it in her shirt, and she's running around being chased, and then she's about to take a bite of it, and it goes sent flying in the air, and she watches it in slow motion, and then she goes, "It wasn't until I lost something that I truly loved." And the fact that they put so much emphasis, I thought it was great.
That was very funny.
Great gag.
So they go back, and this is the Huntress actually shows up. I do love that they keep calling her the crossbow killer. And she's like, that's not who I am.
There's a great cutaway where she practices in the mirror saying, like, do you know who I am, Huntress?
And I love that she goes, when she does it in the field and you see all the guys and they go, the crossbow killer?
Yeah.
No,
the crossbow
killer? No, it's not me. But we find out that she is the lone survivor of the Bertinelli massacre, and that one of the bodyguards took her away to Sicily and raised her, and this is she decided to exact revenge on everybody who killed her family. So that's who she's been killing, and the people responsible for the murder of her family.
Because Harley Quinn knows everyone. We see in the little cutaways, and you know they're very clever with the graphics on screen. And it's once Joker's out of the picture, she has a target on her back, and everyone's out to get her.
Right.
And you see everyone. But when they get to Huntress, who ends up killing the clown guy that Linnea was talking about, yes, earlier, the big huge guy that's mad at her because Joker tattooed the smile on his face permanently, he's got her dead to rights pretty much, and he gets hit in the neck by a crossbow. And it freezes on who we know to be Huntress now. But, you know, it's like question mark, Grievance, question mark. Yeah. So she's the only puzzle piece.
That's one of those, you know, I actually didn't mind that character card thing from Suicide Squad. You know, I thought you know, in Suicide Squad, when somebody would show up, they'd stop it, tell you their name, their powers, whatever. I actually didn't mind that aspect. So I like that they kind of carried that over to this one.
I liked it a lot better here because it matched her personality.
I agree.
It was more fun because, you know, she puts the X's over the eyes and the grievances are really funny. I mean, one thing that I caught the second viewing as well is that in the club, she has a kind of a throwaway line, but she mentions that it's good that he's not mad at her for breaking the driver's legs because he hates her. Like,
right,
she mentions that Roman hates her, but yet because of the Joker, he has to be nice.
Right, right, right.
And I like it when, was it Roman or someone else? But I like it when the list of grievances like piles up, like
it was
to
Roman.
1,000.
Was it Roman?
Yeah. So it's the reason that he doesn't like her is, and it goes through this like slot machine of rolling grievances. And I am kind of interested on home video to pause that and see what they all were, because I bet there's some pretty funny stuff.
Run it in slow-mo.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Huntress shows up, and this is, I'm trying to think, if this is where she's like, you know, Harley kind of says, don't worry about it, everything is, nobody knows that we're here, but then all of a sudden her entire world is shattered, where her place is blown up, and you think that Bruce is dead, but we find out later he's okay.
I love that she names the hyena after Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
the cute Wayne guy,
right.
That's a nice one. But yeah, that's Huntress is with the restaurant guy.
Yeah,
her only friend in the world, and she lives above the food place.
Right.
And he obviously called people in and sold her out, and the place ends up being exploded. And that's when, like you said, she has that turn. If her best friend can turn on her, then
right,
you know, she doesn't have anybody. Yeah.
So she decides to sell the kid out to Roman, and this we should say, I do like this, where she's trying to figure out where the diamond is, and Cassandra's just like, yeah, that's not gonna happen, like we're not gonna get it. And she was like, why, where is it? She's like, well, I ate it. So, you know, she's
that
buying,
was that in the that was in the, that in the car
yeah that was in the she, car yeah
she hands her the dynamite and throws it at the convertible, and she's like, who did I just explode?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So they agree to go to Amusement Mile, which is like this abandoned funhouse, you know, like park.
Is that where in Suicide Squad Joker had all the knives and stuff?
I don't, that's the thing, is like Amusement Mile, I feel like, rings a bell as far as like comic book stuff, but I'm not 100% sure where it could be.
You know how they had all the weapons?
Sure, that's where you get that stupid laugh.
And so I wonder if...
Oh, maybe. That's true.
I wonder if, because they were hanging out there, maybe that was their hideout with the stupid knife scene and all that.
Yeah, it could be. That's true. So now all of our characters are converging. Montoya has been basically suspended and kicked off the force.
She quit.
No, she quits at the end.
Okay, she's suspended. Gotcha. Yeah.
And I do like that they jokingly keep saying that she constantly talks like she's in a 1990s cop TV show.
80s.
Yeah, 80s, right. Yeah. Which I thought was very funny. So all of our characters are converging on Amusement Mile. So you've got Black Canary, and you've got Huntress and Harley and Cassandra and Renee. The problem is this is the scene where I was like, look, there's like 20 people in the Bat family at this point. Some Robin, for Christ's sake, should have been like, I think there's something going on over at Amusement Mile. Like, it's all lit up and there's gunshots coming from everywhere. But no, there's not a Bat family member to be seen.
It doesn't make sense in the lore and when you think about how Gotham operates with Batman and everything. But for this movie, again, they're keeping it separate. They don't have, especially because they don't know. I mean, we don't know what Matt Reeves is doing with his Batman movie.
We know it's not connected.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think they want, just like how they don't have the TV shows go to the movies, which I think is a huge mistake.
You should not say that.
But because of the way that, you know, Grant Gustin and Stephen Amell and how much people love them, but then you go to the...
No, you might want to stop talking.
Okay, I hear you. Don't tell me that. But
I'm not telling you anything. I'm just saying what you're saying isn't...
But that's been a huge mistake for them. And I think that because they don't want anything they do here to be confused or contradict with whatever he's doing,
sure.
You know, they keep them very separate and there's not that synergy going. So that's why I don't think they could even have anyone pop in. And plus, you know, they're not going to have Robin pop in this
movie. This is where you bring in Batgirl.
Yeah, it would have to be Batgirl, yeah. You know, because it is a female. I mean, that's the whole point of the movie. So, yeah, it would be Batgirl. But then I guess you question, like, I don't know, the changes with Cassandra Cain. And I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows? But
it would get too messy, yeah. You know.
So this is a massive fight scene. You've got all of your characters kind of doing what you want them to do. It's very well choreographed and very well put together. You've got very ridiculous... set pieces where like they're jumping off of like teeter totters almost, and like a hall of mirrors and all kinds of insanity. But I thought those were
third act.
The other thing too is that when Black Mask shows up and everybody else shows up that he calls, they're all wearing his ridiculously all the masks he's stolen from around the world.
Yeah,
yeah,
I like that a lot. This is that scene where Zaz is trying, like, it's very obvious that, well, maybe it's not obvious, but it's hinted at that Zaz and Roman have a romantic relationship, or maybe Zaz wants there to be a relationship and Roman is not picking up on it.
The Black Ewan McGregor trying to be effeminate, you know, it didn't always work for me. I think Ewan McGregor's great and I'm fine with him hamming it up and being campy, but he's even said it, like, he believes the character's gay. He played him like he was gay.
Oh, he did? He said that?
And Ewan McGregor's not gay, obviously. And I'm not saying cancel him or why'd you cast him. It's nothing like that. But just when he tried to be effeminate and put it, like, it just didn't seem natural to me. I didn't like it. So I don't know. It didn't work for me, what he was putting on, but I was okay with
him. I thought
it was
fine. Yeah, it didn't bother me, I think.
I like him freaking out. I like him being the rich boy that has a tantrum and I want this person to work for me. And if I can't have her, no one can kind of thing.
I liked
his whiny nature like that. It was just when he put on the more effeminate, when he's like, you know, I'm not even going to do it. But when he's like, oh, let me show you my statues, my whatever. And he's given a tour and Zaz is banging his head against the wall. The way he says that is clearly very effeminate. And
I think in that scene, you can see a Catwoman.
That's
mask
the one
in the background. Yeah,
that's a cool when Easter you see, egg. Yeah,
if it is, I could be wrong. Like it could just been the way, like the, you know, but it looked like a black hooded mask with like ears.
It was hit or miss. The main thing I'm trying to say is that I like Ewan McGregor. It didn't always work for me in this role because I don't think he came off as that intimidating. A lot of time, you know, the best villains, they can be really quiet and really creepy.
Sure.
Or they can be just crazy, like a Joker type character when it's done well, and they can be super intimidating. Like Heath Ledger Joker is great. For me in this one, it didn't always work for me. I thought he was just okay. A little bit of cheese going on, you know.
I think if he had just leaned into like the douchey aspects instead of like the psychopath thing, that would have worked better.
Yeah.
Because that character is just a douchebag. Like, yeah. The whole thing.
Right. That you know, fell on his ass into this empire.
The other thing we didn't mention, and I just don't want to go right over it because we're getting into the third act, which is just action-packed, balls to the wall. Well, I don't know if I can say balls to the wall, but
no balls.
But it's an amazing, I mean, really fun time. But before that, how badass is Black Canary? Like from when she sees the guy at the club after Harley's had all the drinks and he's trying to take advantage of her and put her in the back of a van and all this stuff, and Black Canary kicks these two guys' asses.
She's the MVP.
She is so cool and so good at what she does. I think that character's awesome. Give me a Black Canary spinoff. Like,
she's always been one of my favorite characters. Yeah. There have been some great. Unfortunately, she's kind of always been kind of tied to the Green Arrow.
Right.
But there's been some really good Black Canary stories out there. But
give me Journey Smollett as Black Canary, yeah. this exact Black Canary, give me her in a spinoff of her own.
Yep.
Like, I want to see that movie because she's charismatic, she's kick-ass, she has, you know, great attitude, and she's good with the humor and everything, too.
Yeah.
But, like, she has all these qualities of someone that you want to follow. And again, like, see, she's a good guy. She's doing good things. She's fighting yep. bad guys. Yep. And that's yep. why yep. she can have her own spinoff, and I want that. And
she had the best line of the movie.
Which one was that?
When Harley walks out and she's like, "Hey, you're that singer that nobody listens
oh,
yeah. to."
Ooh.
And she's like, "Hey, you're that girl that nobody likes."
Oh, that's when she's like, "Ouch."
I toned it down a little bit, yeah, but yeah. but it yeah. was just like best line of the movie. Oh. Like, that was a great. She's and
no,
like,
I thought she was great. Yeah. I also like how they didn't like get into like why she has these powers. I mean, they just kind of introduced it early on when she was singing in the club a little bit, yep. and then they did it at the end, and I think that was because that was really the only real supernatural element that they had in this movie.
Yeah.
Correct.
And they just kind of just stuck it in and didn't spend too much time on it. And that's why I liked
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're right.
And I like that they didn't rely on it.
Yeah.
No, it's,
I like that it was a one-time thing, but other than that, she was using her hands and, you know, hands and knees and fists
all of them,
feet
right?
to beat the crap out of everybody. Yeah.
I think that's the really,
which I thought was
yeah,
great.
They didn't depend on powers. They were, you know, all the leads were just kick ass. They had these great action sequences. And you see, aside from Chekhov's martini glass, like you mentioned, Linnea, they show right. you her powers and they allude to it. And that's why it's nice that you kind of forget about it when it comes at the end. But yeah, they don't rely on it. It's not a crutch. And it's, I think it really works in that scene. Like, it's a little goofy, but I think if they had overused it, it wouldn't have worked as well. But
that's right.
They did
yeah,
it
one
time,
I think,
and
yeah.
I thought it was a pretty cool scene. And I like how
it's a ridiculous.
I like
power.
How they
just, let's just
yeah,
put
yeah.
Out
but
there.
I also like how when we get there though, but she propels Harley on her roller skates with the Canary
yeah.
Cry.
Yes, yes, another nice that touch. Was good yeah. stuff. Yeah.
Well, and she just shows up in roller skates.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah,
when did she change her shoes?
But yeah. You know,
there are some really good like one-liners where that is a great liner. It's like, how did she have time for a costume change?
But what yeah. I also like though is that you see when they're getting ready, they show Harley put the roller skates over her shoulder. So
yes.
they were very
yeah.
smart about continuity. There aren't a lot of goof ups in this. The only thing I didn't like, and we're not there yet, but the only thing I didn't like is the grenade
right.
thing. Like, yeah, we saw it. Don't show us again. I hate that when a movie feels like they have to hold your hand. Would any of one have ever questioned, like, how did she get that grenade? They showed it, and
I have a feeling that was supposed to be a different ending.
Oh, okay. You think so?
We'll get there.
Okay.
So yeah. So basically, the birds of prey tear everybody apart. Yeah. Like, they're just tearing through everybody.
And this is totally a Joel Schumacher scene, straight out of Batman and Robin. Like, don't tell me this carnival, high colored, jumping, hitting with mallets, you know, doing somersaults over their heads. Like, man, this is straight out of a scene like that. It really reminded me of
those
movies.
It's weird because I feel like this plays better.
Well, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
you have a better.
There's a camp level to that Schumacher yeah. stuff that is not here.
This is a.
I think, too, the rest of that movie, I think so Batman Forever, whatever.
Yeah.
It takes itself too seriously when it's not campy. I don't know.
The entire time,
it didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, you are not wrong.
The whole
like,
time.
Yeah,
they. Batman Forever is the better of the two, obviously, because he's trying to do the Batman 66 stuff mixed with the Burton
yeah.
stuff.
But Batman and Robin,
you know, like
never takes us.
And Batman and Robin just goes off the
it's
rails.
Crazy.
Like, that is bat skates
yeah.
and bat credit cards. And,
but
you know,
it's ridiculous.
But no, there's no question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying that Batman Robin's better than this or anything. I mean, this is clearly a better movie and better fight choreography. But I think it was fun, though. It brought you back to the point that action movies like this can be fun. And when I see a
yeah.
trailer like something for F9, the F9 saga or whatever it's called,
ugh.
And you see Vin Diesel attaching his car to a vine and it's swinging and you look at him and he looks like he's on the toilet taking a dump because he's just so grumpy looking. It's like, no, your action scenes can be fun. And what this movie really
right.
excelled at was Harley and the crew having fun as they beat these guys up. And
mm-hmm.
I did like that a lot, that you could just check out. This whole third act is crazy and unbelievable.
Crazy.
And it's great, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're Roman gets away with the girl, with Cassandra. And Harley and the Huntress go after him. And this is a great scene where Harley is attached to the back of Huntress's motorcycle.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of like whipping her around from side to side.
So much fun.
And then,
so much fun.
Yeah. And then it pretty much comes down. They come up on this dock and it comes down to Harley versus Roman. And I think that this was supposed to be Jared Leto. I think there was supposed to be her inner monologue was going to be Jared Leto kind of telling her, Jared Leto's Joker, trying to break her down.
Is Jared Leto actually talking to her? Please let me in this movie.
Yeah, also very much so. But just the way it feels, it does not feel like this was Roman trying to break her down, because Roman wouldn't try to do that. Roman doesn't care about her mental state. Like, he just wants her dead.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Where I feel like this whole scene feels like it's her inner monologue, but her inner monologue with the things that are being said, I feel like it would have been the Joker trying to break her down mentally.
Yeah, one thing that we didn't mention, that this whole movie is about her. I mean, because it's called The Fantabulous Emancipation or whatever, the whole movie is about her finding a place on her own, right? She doesn't need a man.
Right.
She doesn't need, like she says, you know, would you know what a harlequin is to the Black Canary?
Right.
And she says, you know, it's someone that has a master and is subservient. And so this whole movie, throughout it, she's gaining her independence and trying to break free from all these people that have betrayed her or tried to put her down and all that, which Joker, as you said, that's the number one.
That's what he does. I hate with the fire of a thousand suns that people try to say, oh, I would love a relationship like Joker.
You're crazy.
Harley,
or yeah, they're crazy.
Like, it's that's the correct face, Linnea, because like, it's disgusting. Like, that relationship is not good.
It's horrible.
It's toxic. Yeah. He's awful to her.
Absolutely.
You know, like, that's it. So I don't understand, you know, why people like ship those two.
Yeah, it's
because he's the worst. Like, he's the worst. And he, like, that's the bottom line, is he broke her. Yeah.
See,
in the grand scheme of things, she may have been a little off to begin with. We don't know. Like, they don't really,
well,
you never
clear,
really get an clear, idea of what Harley was beforehand.
But clearly, if you decide to fall in love with your insane, psychopathic, murderous patient, I mean, I don't care how many degrees she has, something has to be wrong to make her do that, right? Like,
no, I think, and we know she's got some trauma in her past, but the Joker used that to break her down and to break her, and create Harley Quinn.
But you know what I like? I know that it's obviously is this terrible toxic relationship. You're right on all that, and the more current stuff definitely plays into that. But you know, I really liked the relationship on the animated series. Yes, Joker was a jerk to her a lot of times.
It's a little more playful.
But it's more playful. Yes, they're fun together, and Mr. J ignores her a lot of times, but it's not a traumatic, terrible, abusive relationship. It's just more of like her trying to impress
you.
Him.
I honestly don't think that they lead on to a romantic relationship from the Joker's point of view. Harley obviously is in love with him, but the Joker just kind of looks at her as a sidekick, as like a henchman.
Definitely. Yeah. I don't think the Joker's interested in a girlfriend. He doesn't care about that.
No. Yeah. But in this, it's definitely
the romantic part. Yeah.
A romantic relationship.
So, yeah. I like
it's an even worse.
I like the old relationship, and that's why I think when it was created, I think it just played better and it was more of a friendly, goofier thing. And it's in a cartoon, so of course you have more leeway there. But yeah, it's bad news in this one for sure. And I always liked it when Harley would go off with Poison Ivy or, you know, what?
Well, there are a couple.
Yeah, like I like that idea that it's like, you don't need Joker and that was bad. So she does figure it out in other cartoons and comics that, you know, there's other people out there that will treat her better. So
they have completely distanced her from the Joker in the comics. Like, that's not even a thing anymore.
I just don't think you can do that anymore. You know, not in this day and age.
No,
you just can't.
No, not at all. So this fight ensues. And of course,
she has one bullet from, we didn't mention Montoya, and that really funny Easter egg that she pulls out the Daddy's Little Monster shirt. And Harley still, even though she should be over the Joker, she still says, no, that has sentimental value.
No.
And she pulls out the animated series type Harley Quinn, corset, I guess is what that would be.
Yeah.
And,
that's actually more of the video. The Harley Quinn, the animated series is like that jester.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Outfit.
Yeah.
The corset is like the video game Arkham Knight.
That's true. I'm just thinking, the colors, outfit. The black and red, whatever. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But Montoya gets shot, but she was wearing that, and she says, aren't you glad it was bulletproof?
She's like, oh man, they really do. It makes you look
great.
Yeah,
so she thinks they're on this thing called Founders Pier, and there's statues, I guess, of all the Gotham founders. And so she has this monologue that she does, and you think, and you see Cassandra Cain to the side, and you think she's going to shoot Roman in the head, but it's one of those statues. And, and I mean, what does he say? Like, that sure was embarrassing. And she's like, yep, it sure was.
And then basically we find out that Cassandra had the, yeah. that grenade and threw it onto Roman. And I, well, we're not getting the Black Mask in any Batman or Harley sequels.
No kidding. And
because they throw him off the, they throw him off the bridge, and he, I mean, you see him explode on screen. Yeah, like there's just body parts everywhere.
There's no putting that back together. And I, that's the only thing.
No, not at all.
They went back to their old comic book roots. Where like, I don't, I hate it when they kill villains. Like, it's so,
I
it's
do
so
too.
Not.
I think certain villains you can get away with, but like when you kill the Joker
but
or you kill,
you don't kill Black Mask, the Joker, or like the Penguin.
Harvey,
you don't. Yeah,
or,
you don't kill them. So. I thought that was interesting. I guess there's only so much you can do with movies, as in you can do a lot of comic books and bring them back. I guess with a movie, you're not going to circle around before they reboot it next time.
I don't know how they're going to bring him back, but
they're not.
They won't. They're not. So the Birds of Prey kind of win, and they're sitting around eating, drinking margaritas and eating Mexican food, tacos, or shawarma,
depending on, you know.
But finally, Cassandra still hasn't.
I do love, she's like, if this Mexican food doesn't make you I don't know what will. And then, of course, she's like, I'll be right back. So she gets up and runs away.
Harley,
and they have a discussion.
Harley, bring the colander.
I need the sifter. Oh, the colander. And I do like the canary's like, what? Yeah.
When they cheered for Cassandra and she looked at them, that made it. That look that she gives them is amazing.
Harley and Cassandra kind of like walk away. And then all of a sudden, Canary realizes that Harley has stolen her car. And, you know, I do like that they don't put Harley with the team.
So
the Birds of Prey still exist, but Harley's not part of it. Like, she's in there. They're in Gotham together, but she's not part of the team. And then
they get the money out of the Bertinelli account.
They get the money, and she starts her own private eye business, which is, I mean, there's a lot of this movie that owes Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor because they were the ones there may have been a second writer on that book. I'm not sure. But they did a lot of like the beaver, like the stuffed beaver.
Oh yeah,
I was like, right.
Wow.
Right. I mean, okay, like who called? Yeah, right. The stuffed beaver that she has that she's having a conversation.
That got
with.
A lot of laughs. That was a funny moment.
That's from the comic. The hyena is not really from the comic, but they kind of doubled down.
I mean, they've
on
had
it.
That since the animated series. They've always had hyenas.
The apartment, like everything, there's a lot of nods to the Amanda Connor, Jimmy Palmiotti comic. And that's kind of how the movie ends, is she kind of, her and Cassandra are driving off, and they've got the car and they've got the money. And then she finally gets her breakfast sandwich, which I don't blame her because it looked scrumptious.
That was amazing.
I am a sucker for a good breakfast sandwich, and that looked like
the slow motion while she's doing the hair and the wind and everything, and he's making it with the cheese on top. And it was so good.
Yeah, so good, so good. And that's kind of how it ends. So I think, you know, I'm seeing people call this the greatest comic book movie of all time. It's like, well, let's pump the brakes.
Definitely not.
I think it's one of the better ones that DC has done. I think in this current crop of stuff, it's better than anything that came before it as far as like the Snyderverse.
Yeah, it's fun. I think I was entertained. I was entertained the first time. When I got out of the theater,
I'm sad that it didn't do better.
You know,
like that
it,
sucks.
It does.
That.
It deserves to do better than it did. And here's the problem I'm having is the entire internet that's supporting this movie is blaming it all on men. And the deal is WB has to take blame in this. The R rating and the marketing are a huge part. And it's not just because men didn't show up to this movie. I mean, I saw it twice.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people that saw this movie, and it was mismarketed. And I think that people need to realize that there's more than one variable here. I'm not saying that obviously the Toxic Bros didn't see it. We know that, but they're also,
no, they weren't going to, you know what? They may have,
I don't know, but they're a vocal minority. Again, it's like when, what was it? Charlie's Angels? When Elizabeth Banks blamed men for her poor opening, it's like, well, you know, there's 300 million people in the States, and 51% are women. Like, it's not just men that didn't show up. A lot of people didn't show up to your movie, and the same thing is true here. So again, it's not like I'm on Toxic Fan Bros' side, but also let's not let WB off the hook. It was mismarketed.
No, I agree.
Rated R was completely misused in this. You know, I think they should have leaned into it.
I don't know. I don't. I'm not so sure about if the rated R was misused. I think that if there's any character that they could get away with this Deadpool-esque, which is what they were going for, is what this is kind of the vibe they wanted. I think this is the character that gets your rated R.
But they
movie.
Didn't. I'm not.
You're not going to do a rated R Batman. You're not going to do a rated R Superman. Thank God. But I think that Harley or the dark, the quote unquote dark universe, Constantine or Swamp Thing or any of those other like dark characters, I think you could even maybe pull off a dark Wonder Woman movie, like a rated R. It's not the easiest thing, but I think that's it. But Harley is the character that you would give the rated R.
You can. And
yeah, but I just don't think they needed to.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not.
I agree.
You don't need a rated R Wonder Woman movie.
Yes.
No, totally. I totally agree with
that. I agree with you. There is a way to use an R-rated Harley, but what I'm saying is I didn't see it. Every time it was just like there's just F-words scattered in. It's not like they're a mile a minute. They're just here and there.
Right.
The action was not that violent. There's a lot of times where you don't see blood. There's a couple, but other than that, there's not that much blood. It's just they didn't use it right. Deadpool leaned into it. Here, they made the mistake of not leaning into it. Like, if you were going to do it, make it crazier, make it more violent, more language, like clever, funny language, not just dropping F-bombs, but, you know, writing to where the jokes are like Deadpool.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm just saying I think WB and the creatives are a lot of the blame goes on them, but of course we know what it's going to all be put on, which is a small piece of the puzzle. So it's a shame in any event, because what does this do to future female-led comic book movies, you know, that aren't
non-Wonder
Woman? I mean, obviously that's established, but what does that do for people taking risks? Like, will we get a Black Canary movie? I think Black Canary is so awesome in this. I would love to see that spinoff, but does this box office, will that allow them to take a risk on it? And it's sad if the answer is no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a shame. Like, that's, you're trying to do something different and it doesn't work for whatever reason. So, you know, like I said, my fear is that we'll go back to the same old, and it's just going to, Marvel's just going to keep extending that lead further and further and further, because they are doing different stuff.
Well, at least it seems like Marvel,
like introducing Rogue and Captain Marvel.
Yeah,
too.
Luckily Marvel is doing really well, and I think Wonder Woman is going to continue to do really well with the female led stuff.
I think it will.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. As long as she doesn't fight a giant CG monster at the end. We're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't think Cheetah is going to turn into a huge CG monster.
She looks great.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Like that looks really good. I'm pretty excited for that.
Linnea, what are your kind of overall thoughts?
I thought it was a lot of fun, and I think people should go see it.
Yeah, I think it's a good time at the theater. It's
you're
not going to be bored. It's clever. It's good action. And again, when I got out of the theater the first time, I was somewhere at like a 6 out of 10. I was like, it was okay. I didn't love it. The second time, I think I bumped it up to a 7, like 3.5 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, I'll give it a solid 7.5.
Yeah, I think that's where it lands, where it's not like the best movie ever made, not the best comic book movie, but is it entertaining? Is it fun? Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, well, that will do it for this episode. Linnea, thank you so much again for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Tell the folks where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Linnea1928.
All right. And Joe?
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. And like I mentioned before, social media stuff at Real Spoilers on Twitter, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever, you know where to find us. But the ratings and reviews are very helpful, so we do appreciate that. Thank you to those who've reviewed us, and if you haven't, we would appreciate it. And you can also review the show on Facebook, so if you're on the Facebook page, those reviews are helpful as well. And join the League of Show Shares. I didn't mention that before, but we've got the fan community that there's like, I don't know, 150 to 200 something people on there, but it's a place where you can join the conversation and present your own topics, and we have 365 movie challenge going on there. We have news, trailers that drop. So it's a really good community to be a part of with like-minded film fans. We'd love to have you there if you're on Facebook. Patreon.com/Real Spoilers, $5 a month. Get those extra specials and one that will directly tie into the character of Harley Quinn. So stay tuned for that.
Maybe.
But that will do it for this episode. So coming up next is The Invisible Man. Is that
Fantasy Island?
Oh, it's Fantasy Island and Sonic are the two movies
next week.
And then I think Invisible Man's after that. So we'll have to see what we decide to do.
That was a cat. I know the sound of that.
It's my dog. Sorry.
All right, dog.
So anyway, does the dog want to tell the folks where they can? Does he have a social media account or anything?
No, he doesn't. You can find him on my Instagram, though.
There you go. See? So that will do it for this episode. Join us for whatever we're talking about next time. Until then, I don't have a clever outro, so you've been warned.
flat. I never knew that our romance had ended until you poisoned my food. And I thought it was a lark when you kicked me in the park. But now I think it was rude.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.